Ohio's unemployment rate is lower than the national average, finally dipping below 7% for the first time in years, but many in the Buckeye State still struggle to keep food on the table. According to the Ohio Association of Food Banks, the need for their services has increased by 45% in the last 3 years. And yet, last week, County Jobs and Family Services directors learned they faced even more cuts in the federal food stamp program. Coming up, we'll hear more about the food banks. Joining us right now to talk about food stamps, the food stamps issue, is Joel Potts. He's executive director of Ohio Job and Family Services Directors Association. Welcome to the show, Joel.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning.
So the food assistance program was facing some big cuts last week, just last week, but the crisis apparently has been averted. Why the cuts in the first place?
Without sounding too bureaucratic, every year the every state is required to look at what standard costs are in households. And one of the big costs, obviously, is incurred is utilities. So for individuals who have earnings, who pay for their own heating and cooling, they have an option or they have a built into the food stamp program or food assistance program, as it's now known as. They have what's referred to as a utility allowance. We look at what the average costs are for utility bills. We deduct that amount from their earnings, and we calculate their food assistance based on the earnings after that deduction. Well, over the last couple of years, there's actually been a huge cut in the cost of certain fuels, in particular natural gas. And with the decrease in natural gas, food assistance households who utilize that particular utility deduction, we're looking at a loss of about $50 a household for their food assistance benefit, which is really much higher than we've ever experienced before. Every year there's a fluctuation, usually somewhere in the $20 range. Sometimes they may get $20 more, sometimes $20 less. But we were facing, come January 1st, without any changes, we were looking at a $50 deduction to a lot of food assistance households.
And what's the typical monthly assistance?
For a family of three, which is most of our households fit that, it would be a maximum benefit of $526. So they would have been looking at a loss of $50 of that. So they would have been in the
10%
475
range.
Yeah, mm-hmm. 10% loss, right.
So, but the crisis has been averted somehow, or it's less than the cut.
Yeah.
What happened? What happened?
A lot of things. I will tell you, I think that the State Department of Job and Family Services really stepped up, as well as a lot of groups. I know you're going to be talking in a short while with some folks from the food banks.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody kind of rallied around this. We looked at this and realized it was going to be, you know, really harmful to families that depend on the food assistance program to meet their nutritional needs. And that also includes our federal folks as well. A lot of our federal legislators and Senator Brown's office, everybody kind of got involved. We worked with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. They expedited a review of the utility costs. You know, part of the problem we had, I think, in Ohio's program is we base it on PUCO, gives us, you know, Public Utilities Commission gives us the average costs, and that's what we base our utility allowance on. So it was weighted heavily with just the cut in natural gas, but we also looked at other heating fuels, you know, including propane and those sorts of things. So when the Department of Agriculture allowed us to recalculate based on all the different fuels that are being utilized to heat homes, and when they did that, they saw that the average cost had not decreased as much as would have appeared by our earlier calculation. So it was allowing us to use a wider range of things that went into our calculation.
Just joining us, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest right now is Joel Potts. He's Executive Director of Ohio Job and Family Services Directors Association. We're talking about the food assistant program at almost, what was it, about a $3 million cut it would have been to the state or more?
Much more.
Much more.
Yeah,
okay, I don't know
yeah.
where I got $3 million.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so there's been an increased demand for the program, but how can that be? I know there are people out there wondering, how can that be given the fact that Ohio is doing so much better compared to the rest of the country with its unemployment?
Yeah, and great question. I appreciate your asking it because, you know, obviously having spent the last 20 years of my life dealing with public assistance programs, food assistance is probably the least understood, and I think that one of the things that really masks the need out there is that we focus a lot on the unemployment rate. And while that's certainly great news, the really sad part of that is something that we all know who work in this field is that the new jobs that are being created do not provide the same types of incomes and the type of benefits that previous programs or previous jobs had provided. And so our single largest growth of all the folks in the food assistance program are individuals who have earnings, meaning that people are going back to work, but they're not earning enough money to be able to provide, you know, for their families, and they are more dependent than ever on our public assistance programs, in particular the food assistance program. So while the unemployment rate's going down, we're actually continuing to see growth in our food assistance program.
What you mentioned that the typical family is a family of three. What else do we know about who uses food stamps or the food assistance program?
Sure.
Assistance program.
Yeah, we have almost 2 million Ohioans at any point in time are receiving food assistance in Ohio. Of that, 75% of those individuals are either seniors, disabled, or children. So, you know, this view of who's on public assistance, I don't think people realize a lot of times this is senior citizens on fixed incomes, you know, have no other source of income, and they're depending on the food program to provide just their basic food and nutrition. You know, so that clearly, I think, is a different population from what people think. And also why, you know, with 75% of them fitting that category, why the unemployment rate isn't showing as much of an impact, you know, on people utilizing it. You know, 1 out of 4 Ohioans at some point this year are going to depend on Job and Family Services for some type of assistance. I mean, that's so far beyond anything that I've ever experienced in all my years of working with this. So even with the improving economy, the need continues to be there. We also have seen that about a third of the folks that are coming on to assistance right now are brand new to the system. These are people who never in a million years ever thought they would be applying for any type of welfare benefit, who never envisioned they would be, you know, in the situations that they're in. And that, you know, again, is a very troubling sign for the economy. So while we are creating jobs, like I said, the types of jobs, the types of benefits and things are not nearly what they need to be to help families be able to sustain themselves without having some other type of assistance.
You know, after all that, the hoopla during the campaign about the givers and the takers and all of that, it became such a part of a national conversation, really. I was wondering, what do county officials do? Because they're at the front lines when it comes to doling this stuff out. How do they deal with people who are feeling that tremendous guilt or inhibition or shame or whatever is associated with taking help?
Yeah, great question. And it is a huge challenge for us. You know, we've got a lot of folks out there that we know are eligible and for a host of reasons do not come in and apply for the benefits that they are entitled to. You know, and they're struggling. We know the people that are within our system are struggling. So, you know, when we look out there, we see what the poverty rates are. We know that there are significant populations. We do a lot of outreach, you know, to make sure that folks, you know, are aware. Even if they, you know, go back to the point that we've got a lot of people who are working and still receiving some food assistance benefit. Now, their earnings are taken into consideration. So for about every $3 they earn, they lose $1 in food assistance benefits. So they may not receive the full amount, mm-hmm. but they may be eligible for $50, and that $50 can go a long way, you know, towards helping them meet, you know, their needs. You know, so we definitely have made changes in that. The fact that we don't call it food stamps anymore, we don't mm-hmm. have food coupons like we used to. We now use what's called an electronic benefits card or EBT card. You know, works just like a check card would, and it has done a lot to take the stigma out of it. You know, to make it easier for folks to obtain the benefits. They don't have to come down to the agency every month and physically pick up those things. We also have made a lot of changes in the last couple of years that have made it much easier. Once you're in the system, they can renew their benefits over the phone. They can actually even apply online now and don't have to physically come through the agencies. I mean, a lot of folks are embarrassed, you know, to have to go on welfare, and they shouldn't be. I mean, these programs are there. And, you know, for them, we recognize their needs of folks, and as long as they're willing to comply with the program, these benefits continue to be there for them, and we need to do more. We need to do more shows like this, you know, let people know that if they think they might be eligible or if they have a need, they should at least contact us and go through the eligibility process to see if there's not something we can do to help out.
Do you see an uptick around the holidays of people trying to see if they're eligible because they need a little bit more?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's when they really start feeling the strain, you know, on things. Plus, you know, it's just the time of year. You know, it's cold. Their heating bills and those things are going up. Their you know, especially families, they're buying winter coats as their kids are growing. They need clothes. You know, they're doing various things as they get them back to school. So, you know, a really busy time for us really is that September through December time frame.
Are most people long-term users of food stamps?
You know, there are certain populations that are.
Elderly people, I suppose, are the ones that never get off the fixed income.
Correct, mm-hmm. correct. Those are on fixed income to do, but we actually do have a tremendous amount of people that churn, you know, which is another thing that when you look at it, they come into the program, they fall on temporary hard times, maybe they've lost a job, you know, you may be going through a situation where the family is splitting up, unfortunate, you know, families that are victims of domestic violence, they fled mm-hmm. their home, they're reestablishing themselves. You know, they come in, they get temporary help. It helps them through that transition period, and after a few months, they leave. And, you know, they may come back periodically, or we may never see them again. But the program's clearly there for them. So it is different groups. But again, if that 75% of the folks that we're serving, again, if they're seniors, disabled, you know, children, you're not seeing as much fluctuation as you do for the family, you know, who usually is falling on harder times, you know, trying to find more stable employment. You know, we're also looking, we know the unemployment, the 99-week thing is coming to an end in December. So we are anticipating that somewhere in the end of December, early January, we're going to see an uptick, you know, in folks that are receiving unemployment that are going to be looking for other ways to supplement their home budgets to care for their families.
Also with us, Matt Haba, she's president and CEO of Mid-Ohio Food Bank, and Lisa Hamler-Fugit, executive director of Ohio Association of Food Banks. Lisa, did that name change? Is it
yes.
just me? Okay. All right. So a lot of what, particularly, I guess, Matt Habash, you could talk about this too, is you're not just handing out food. You're helping people get connected to these other sources of help as well.
Absolutely. I think when you think about a food pantry and somebody coming in to get help, I mean, we're out in the community, and the opportunity there through, you know, the benefit bank, which is a wonderful opportunity for people to find out, you know, whether they're eligible for a whole host of services. I mean, so when you think about food now, you can think about this impact it has on health. You can think about the impact it has on kids and, you know, education and the impact it even has on workforce. You know, that's the other thing that we keep talking about. So there's this opportunity to make sure people are connected to all the benefits that they could be eligible for, because ultimately, when you look at it, it's what's your resources in your home every month to provide all your needs. And we often tell people, meet all those other needs first and get food assistance, you know, as kind of the catch-all, as opposed to spending your dollars initially on food, and then you can't pay the mortgage, can't pay the rent, can't pay the water bill, whatever, you know, whatever else, can't buy your kids' shoes, whatever you need in that particular day.
And Lisa, you find that's pretty common. That's very typical now at a food pantry to have other information there, other help.
Absolutely. And as Matt said, the Ohio Benefit Bank, working with the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services, 8 other state agencies, and a network of more than 1,300 organizations in our county departments of Job and Family Services. One is debunking the myth. Folks don't believe that if they work, they can still receive food assistance or food stamp benefits. But then connecting them, these are continuing to be very fragmented systems. Folks who work at low-wage jobs, don't have paid time off, they're always struggling with transportation. And I mean, it is poverty. That is the problem, is despite the fact that we are seeing a better unemployment data, we still have far too many Ohioans and Americans who work every day but don't earn enough to be able to put food on their table and a roof over their head. We're all seeing the same thing. Have your utility prices dropped in the past year? Are you paying less for gas, food, housing, or utilities? The answer is no. But these wages have continued to remain stagnant.
Joel Potts, before I let you go, Lisa brought up health, and there is a correlation, at least, between health and healthiness and food and food security.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it's also one of the things that is really challenging with the poor population.
Right.
Are the healthy foods are more expensive than unhealthy foods. And, you know, we need to do a better job of helping individuals who are struggling to get not just food, but get the right foods.
Well, which brings up another criticism of the whole food assistance program. You hear it. You've read the letters to the editor. Why is this lady in line by using her food card to get, you know, fill-in-the-blank junk food?
Mm-hmm. Again, a lot of it has to do with just cost. Mm-hmm. You know, you can make that dollar spread, you know, in the grocery store on things that aren't as healthy. You know, one of the things that I wish we could get all legislators to do, I wish we could get folks involved in, there is what's called the food stamp challenge, which is try to live for a week on you know, the same benefit level that you would receive if you were on food stamps, and go to the grocery store and see what you can and can't buy. And I would tell you, I've been involved in this for over 20 years. I did it a couple of years ago, and it was the most eye-opening experience that I've had. It really is challenging, you know, to be able to spread that dollar and get the kinds of food and nutritional things, you know, especially when you want to try to get fresh fruits and vegetables and those sorts of things. The dollar doesn't go nearly as far as people would think, and that does create a problem.
Joel Potts, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Anne. My pleasure.
Joel Potts, he's Executive Director of Ohio Job and Family Services. We'll return to our conversation with Matt Habash and Lisa Hamler-Fugit when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Where do you go for great conversation on the topics that matter the most? The radio is more responsive than the water cooler, and we take your calls. I'm Jennifer Ludden. If you're talking about it, we're probably talking about it too. Join us for provocative talk on the issues you care about. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 to 4. It's 39 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly sunny skies today and a high of 60. Clouds tonight, a low of 37, partly sunny with a high of 58 on Tuesday, and more sunshine with a high of 58 on Wednesday. Support for 89.7 comes from Dental Reflections Dublin, a multi-specialty dental practice for the whole family. Pediatric specialist Dr. Hackman and general dentist Dr. Asani. Give details about their range of services online at dentalreflections-dublin.com or by phone at 799-5576. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This week, many Americans are pulling out all the stops to put the meal of the year on the table. On Thursday, friends and family are traveling to join the party, but times might not be absolutely the greatest. They're a lot better than they have been, so this should be a Thanksgiving to remember, right? Unfortunately, that's not the case for thousands of Ohioans who are still unemployed, or if they have a job, or two, or three, they still don't earn enough to make ends meet for their families. Many of them turn to food assistance programs. Many of them also turn to food banks. Despite the improved economy, the number of Ohioans depending on food banks keeps growing. Joining us now to talk about that is Lisa Hamler-Fugit. She's executive director, as I said earlier, of the Ohio Association of Food Banks. Lisa, once again, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And Matt Habash, he's president and CEO of Mid-Ohio Food Bank. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So you wanted to get back to the food assistance program for a bit and just to kind of flesh it out a little bit more about what we were talking about in terms of $50 a month. Is what does that really mean?
It was going to be a loss of up to $540 million, one-sixth of the entire amount that the state receives. The poorest of the poor. It will be a loss of no more now than $23 a month, but that's equivalent to a loss of 15 meals a month for the poorest of the poor. Also, we're very concerned about what kind of an impact this is going to have both on seniors and persons with disability. And the other piece that I wanted to bring up is we did hear a lot about food stamps during this campaign, the food stamp president, and it was sad. It was demoralizing to the 47 million Americans who play by the rules and have to depend on this program. And I agree with Joel for every one of the candidates and the talking heads who bashed the food stamp program and the food stamp president. I would encourage them to try to live on food stamps for a week.
Matt, what were you expecting when we're talking about that kind of a cut in the food assistance program? Do you have to brace then for more demand at the food pantries?
Absolutely. I mean, when you think about, you know, food pantries, I think there's two thoughts. One is, you know, about 42% of the people we help are on food stamps already. So getting the food stamps isn't enough to, you know, to get them through. It does not last. You know, it's not, it was never designed to be a program that feeds you for the entire month. And as a result, if you've got all these other challenges and don't have any other income, you're still coming to a pantry. So you have that, you know, kind of folks continuing to show up. And then given the fact that, you know, a number of our people are working, more than 40% of the folks we help work. You know, that's a thing that people don't think about. We've had conversations before about the explosion of hunger in the suburbs. That's still going on. You had a banker once tell me pretty simply, you know, you had a 725, you know, credit score, and you now got a 500 credit score because of all the challenges you've had. Getting back to that is a long-term process. And so even though we think people are recovering in a variety of ways, and if you'd, you know, it's not happening, and then you add this kind of cut, if that cut had been $50, that's more than the dollar value of the food that people are giving people already. We don't have that much more food to handle people from the private sector to say, yeah, we've got that much more in the private sector we can give you. It's not there.
Because the demand for that has been going up as well.
Absolutely.
And food cost. I mean, you know, we have seen food costs rise rapidly. The Consumer Price Index has said that we could expect food prices to rise by another 5 to 6% in 2013. And individuals' incomes are not rising. The same thing with the cost of living for those who are on Social Security. We're just not seeing it. It's the pulling apart. It's the pulling apart of wage disparity and income inequity.
To our listeners, the trend of food insecurity in Ohio is growing at a pace nearly unmatched in the rest of the country. If you're struggling to put food on the table and want to know how to get help, give us a call. If you want to know how to help, give us a call as well. The number is 614-692-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you have a story about getting help from the state or from the county or from your local food pantry and want to talk about that, we welcome that as well. 614-292-8513. Joe in Columbus, welcome to the show, Joe.
Thank you. I just wanted to talk about my experience. This is back in 1995, but my husband and I had a baby, and while I was finishing school, we were on public assistance for about a year. And we got, for our family of three, we got $200 a month in food stamps. And I can tell you, I was at the thinnest of my life during that time.
I'm sorry, you were at, I didn't
like,
understand.
The thinnest. Oh, the thinnest, you know. And, but we lived next door to my mother and father-in-law. And I can tell you that if it wasn't for being able to go next door and have dinner with Norman Roger a couple times a week, I don't think we would not have made it on the $200 a month. So it does take, you know, extra help. It's not gonna even put the basics on the table for a whole month.
A lot of families, that's the case. A lot of families are banding together and helping each other out. But that puts a lot of stress sometimes on mom and dad, the in-laws, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, I liken this unending Great Recession is what I call it, the lasting carnage of jobs lost, opportunity lost. We're seeing this Walton effect. We haven't seen these household sizes since 2000, and that was a direct result of welfare reform when people lost basic cash assistance. While we call it food assistance in Ohio, the new name for the food stamp program is called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. It is a supplemental program, assuming that people have 30% of their income at which to supplement the benefit. And what we find, certainly for those who are relying on food assistance or SNAP, as well as a local food bank, food pantry, or soup kitchen, they have no additional income at which to supplement those benefits.
I think one of the interesting things, we opened our own food pantry in January down at the food bank, and one of the changes we're able to tell because of the software system that we have tracking everybody coming in, the number of families now that have senior citizens in the household and kids in the household, and there is no other adult. So that the parent's not there. The grandparents have the kids. That is a growing trend that we are seeing where they have the kids, and they, you know, this may be somebody, you know, that was working their entire life, is on their own pension, you know, and has Social Security, and they were getting by. And all of a sudden, here comes some mouths to feed, and mouths, they're very concerned
and
about
feed
feeding.
And feet to shot and so forth, all the other
every other cost that comes along with dealing with raising kids. Just everybody think about your own kids and what it costs to raise kids. Now, dump that on the grandparents all of a sudden is an unfortunate way of saying that, but that's true. I mean, they're taking the kids in because they're not going to let those kids go hungry, and it's really put a stress on them.
I just want to say thanks to Joe for that call. We really appreciate it. Again, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment, you want to talk about how food assistance helped you back in the day, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Sarah in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. I just want to make two quick comments. One is, I work with a lot of families who get assistance, and not only getting the assistance, but having someplace to prepare the food is often an issue, because a lot of apartments that you can rent don't come with a stove or a microwave or anything. So I work with a lot of children who eat out of prepared food packages because there's no way to store or, you know, cook the food.
Very important. Not to mention even a frying pan. I mean, just basic utensils. Matt, what do food banks? I mean, what do food pantries do to help out with that? Is there anything they can do?
Well, I think first of all, she's making a really good point. You know, and something I often say to people: we got to get out of our own middle class SUV. We go to the grocery store, buy food, come home, have a place to put it, can buy things in bulk, have a deep freeze. What all the things that we do to keep food? Because a lot of people don't have that option, and I think that's a very good point that the caller just made. And I think the other piece of Marvin said, we're doing something as simple as teaching crockpot cooking. Because we're now getting fresh food. You know, more and more of the meat we're getting is fresh. And so the idea of giving somebody, you know, teaching them how to use a very simple instrument, you know, crock pot, you can't burn your house down with one of those things. At least I've never seen anybody do it. You know, and first you're going to do is overcook the food. But teaching people how to cook fresh food, how to cook, and we're getting some meat donated, potatoes, carrots, those kind of things. So there's, you're constantly looking for ways. You're trying to adapt the food at a pantry to the person. They may only have a microwave. You know, and so how do you then, what can you do in a microwave that you don't have a stove for? You know, very limited storage. You think about refrigerators. My old college refrigerator was the one you opened up and had that tiny little one inside of one door. Doesn't mm-hmm. keep anything frozen. You know, there are people still with those kind of refrigerators. And that's the thing. We forget all of that, you know, when we go about, well, they could just do this or they could just do that or they could buy in bulk or they could do that. You know, it's not true. A lot of these people are trying to do the right thing in very difficult situations.
And I want to say that one of the coping strategies is that you're earning a very limited income, and all of a sudden we had a horribly hot summer. A lot of folks with health conditions had to run air conditioners. Now they're looking at past due bills. We also have families that are living periodically without utilities because they have fallen behind. And then that's when it really puts a burden not only on our soup kitchens, but also to have that prepared or food where they can pop a lid off of a can, certainly with the backpack programs that food banks are operating. It's kid-friendly foods that don't need to be prepared. Here again, we're talking about 1 in 6 Ohio families now find themselves unable due to a lack of resources and are defined by the United States Department of Agriculture as food insecure.
Thank you, Sarah, for that call. We appreciate it. Matt in Richwood, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Hi. I just wanted to say this is such an important conversation to be having. Thank you for having it. I just wanted to comment and sort of ask your guests to what extent they believe that the food bank system could benefit from closer integration with community gardens and local agricultural organizations.
Matt Habash?
I could have a very long conversation about this. I'll try to keep it very brief. I believe that the future of food banking is fresh food. And clearly what's left in the fields is 3 to 6 billion pounds of fresh produce every year. This is a big year, closer to 3 billion. We've had a big drought. But the reality of it is, you know, we're going to continue to, you know, connect people to healthier, fresh foods. There's always opportunities, whether it's plant a row for the hungry, you know, whether churches are now growing gardens, teaching people how to grow food, backyard, all of those things are going to help. You know, the reality of it is I often liken community gardening as it's a really good community organizing principle as well. It's like doing a community food drive. It really helps. When you're able to do that, but we got to do it on a much bigger scale in this community, and I think that's our challenge. We really want to see. I have a question that we keep asking ourselves, and that is, how does a community feed itself? And I think that's a community conversation that needs to continue to occur because there are opportunities. We really work closely with the farmers. We've had fabulous results in the farmers, and Lisa can tell you statewide what we've been able to do with the Ohio farmers. But we're now connecting with even the smaller farms and the farmers markets, who know on a Tuesday or Wednesday what they're going to sell for the weekend, and they may have have a little extra, can they give it to a food pantry? Can they give it to a church to give out to somebody that's hungry? And then if it's something unusual, make sure they have a recipe to know what to do with it.
Yeah. Through our Ohio Agriculture Clearance Program, we've worked with Ohio farmers, growers, and commodity producers since welfare reform to procure cosmetically challenged fruits and vegetables, too big, too small, not grade A. And in the last 3 months, it was over 36% of all the food we distributed in the state of Ohio came as a direct result of this program. So Matt's right. It's having a broader conversation about making these connections. But Ohio really does lead the nation in this initiative of getting foods out of the orchards, out of the fields that would normally have rotted. And it's completely wholesome and oftentimes much fresher than what we could buy in the grocery store.
Matt, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. And Matt Habash, you've got a garden out at the food bank now, right? We
yes.
talked about that last year.
Mm-hmm.
How'd it go?
It's a wonderful garden. If you ever want to get a sense of what high school science projects are these days, this was a group of high school students from Metro High School who a couple years ago developed a raised bed garden with a solar panel on top, catching the rain off of our big warehouse roof. You know, and it is a really neat demonstration of how you can do this fairly simply. And I think there's more of that. I've had numerous conversations with people who want to do hoop houses, which could be an economic development opportunity for some people who could create jobs, that could sell the produce. The restaurants are looking for more and more fresh food. So there's this whole new way of looking at how to do a lot of things that could help support also making sure people know what to do. So, you know, to me, it's the future of what we need to do. There is so much land available. Of all the cities in the country, Detroit is leading the nation because 40% of Detroit's land is vacant.
Right.
So they're trying to regrow food there. Cleveland's doing some really innovative things. So there's been some great projects here. One of the things we're trying to do with Wyland Park is figure out, can they come up with a food production system in Wyland Park to create jobs in Wyland Park, but to take some of this fresh produce we're getting and extend the life of it. What else could you make that's a good, healthy food that could go back to the earlier caller's question? If we could put it in something that somebody could open and just heat up, you know, then we've taken that great product that's grown in Ohio and stretched the life of it to a longer period than just the seasonality of our harvest.
It's really about getting back in touch with our food and how it's grown and where it comes from and kind of, you know, back to the future, old, all that's old is new again.
Absolutely. And I think anybody that walks through a grocery store and you pick up and you look at the food and you look at the country of origin, I mean, it is extremely frightening that we are importing more and more, especially in the area of canned fruits. And we certainly know that the standards in many of these countries are not nearly as high as that of the U.S. And I think as a matter of national security, we really need to focus on developing new food production systems, as Matt said.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We'll continue our conversation in a minute. We'll be right back.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, Israel and Hamas this time, and what's changed with Egypt reshaped and Syria at war. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. And it's 44 degrees in downtown Columbus, partly sunny skies for today, and a high near 60 degrees, partly cloudy for tonight, a low of 37. Expect some sunshine for Tuesday with a high of 58, and partly cloudy for Wednesday with a high of 58. And stay with us for hour two of All Sides, beginning in 20 minutes. Get some holiday travel tips, from the practical to the emotional. That discussion from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio State's Wexner Medical Center. November is Personal Healthcare Month in Ohio. And the Wexner Medical Center wants to help people live a healthier, happier life. Information on how to join the Wexner Medical Center and make a pledge to live healthy is at medicalcenter.osu.edu. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guests, Matt Habash, he's president and CEO of Mid-Ohio Food Bank, and also Lisa Hamler-Fugit, executive director of the Ohio Association of Food Banks. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. We're talking about food insecurity, food assistance programs, and food pantries out there trying to help. 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to our Facebook page and post there, as did Samson. He says, I think that elderly people and others with medical issues are the ones our country should continue to invest in. People in their 20s with three kids need help as well, but they also need to be pushed toward vocational training or college. Help get these people jobs. Help the elderly and sick live better. What about the ages? What do we know about the demographics of people? It sounded like, I think it was Sarah, or maybe it was Joe that called in earlier. They were trying to get training and they were trying to get their college education, but they still needed some help.
My sense, you know, just in general, is that everybody we encounter has an amazing story, you know, about their life and what they're trying to do. Nobody wants to come to a food pantry. And what's been interesting, you know, as I said, we opened our pantry, and you know, and it was in January. 47% of the people we've helped, which is a lot, we're the third largest pantry in the system right now, only came once in 9 months. So it's not like they're coming back and back and back. So for a segment of the population, these people were only coming one time asking for some help. Now, what we'll be able to figure out is that's, if that's across the whole system here in about a year. But it really is a case where people, the statistic that scares me most is they tell me by 2025, which isn't that far away,
right,
there's going to be a 50% increase in seniors that are food insecure. Now, these are people who've played by all the rules, are either going to have to keep on working if they can, you know, just to get by. And for all the folks that can't, what do we do? That's the biggest, that's the thing that gives me the biggest scare.
And they are the canary in the coal mine. And here again, in the last quarter, the number of seniors we fed statewide was up to 13.4%. Over 40% of those who received food from a local food pantry were children, again, working parents. You know, these are sound investments. I mean, certainly we need to increase the food stamp allotment, which we're not having a conversation about. In fact, at the federal level, in the name of deficit reduction and the fiscal cliff, both proposals pending in the U.S. House and Senate would make deeper cuts to the SNAP program. But for seniors, it is critical that we're able to get them enough nutritionally adequate food so they can live out their golden years with a little bit of dignity in their own homes. If not, they're going straight into nursing homes. And that's in paid for by Medicaid and Medicare. It's the same thing with chronic health conditions. You know, food is the best vaccine. Healthy, wholesome food is the best vaccine for what we're spending on an unsustainable healthcare system.
Beth in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Beth.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think that this topic fits in really well because last week On Point had was talking about the topic of only part-time work and the difficulty of having trying to make two part-time jobs work together because of the scheduling software and getting caught and getting fired by, you know, by one business or the other. And so this fits in very well. And also Smiley and West have been talking about this. And the bottom line is the thing that I find that's really frustrating is nobody's talking about the P word, which is poverty. You know, you don't hear anybody in, certainly didn't hear President Obama talking about poverty when the campaign was going on. It was all about the middle class. But, you know, there's so many people who have gone through the ravages of this financial crisis that are not middle class, and a lot of people who were maybe never middle class to begin with. Mm-hmm. And had a lot of one of the other things I wanted to say is that Anthony Bourdain said that the biggest challenge that we as Americans have is that nobody teaches anybody how to cook anymore. Nobody knows how to boil water. Nobody knows how to, you know, even make pasta for themselves. And if we can't fix some of the basics, we're going to continue to develop or eat processed foods and learn less, then you know, it's a mm-hmm. vicious cycle. And I could go on and on, but I won't. I'll just quickly mention food, not bombs.
So, okay. Okay,
bye.
Beth, thanks. So you give them all the tools. They have a stove. They have a frying pan. But people still don't know how to cook. And how do you get over that? I mean, you have slow cooker classes, Matt. You said
right. But I think most people do know how to cook. I mean, my sense is there's a population. There's some people who have never cooked, and you've got to be able to address that. They've got to be willing to tell you that, and that's often difficult for people to share what they can and can't do. Nobody wants to tell you they're food insecure either. You go to a doctor's office, they don't tell it. You know, doctors don't screen for food insecurity. So you have a whole sense of challenges that my sense is, we often hear, most of the produce we're giving out is mainline produce. It's potatoes and apples and carrots and cabbage. People know what to do with those kinds of things. Now, if you give me a rutabaga, I wouldn't know what to do with it either. I'd have to go look it up, kind of thing. So I think it's a case of, majority of people do know how to cook. We can work on the kids. The beauty of this crockpot thing is you can teach kids how to do it. You don't have to do it yourself. You can get the kids before they go off to school and teach them how to do it. The meal's ready, when they come home, and you may get multiple meals. So, we're going to continue to do. There's a lot of, wonderful people wanting to teach people how to cook, how to make recipes, how to do things. You ask anybody in the farmer's market world, and they'll give you a multitude of ways to do things. So we got to be able to bring that kind of level for people that go to farmer's markets to people that don't. And where are the opportunities?
I think one of my favorite things is the Columbus Public Health's Farmers Market in the summer. It's just so much fun.
It is. And here again, we have both a WIC Farmers Market coupon program as well as a Senior Farmers Market coupon program. And not only is that helping to stimulate the economy by giving outlets for local growers and farmers, but it is connecting people to their food. Here again, these are critical nutritional safety nets that are all under attack at the federal level in the name of deficit reduction and the potential fiscal cliff. But what your caller brought up is this is poverty. And we have to have a conversation about poverty in this country. Why is it that people that work every day, often multiple part-time jobs, still live in poverty? And you have to be poor, meaning your income has to be below 100% of the federal poverty level in order to even qualify for food stamps. We're mandated to serve people up to 200% of the federal poverty level through our network. Today in Ohio, 31.8%, 3,561,514 Ohioans now have income below 200% of the federal poverty level.
Waldina in Laurelville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Waldina.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Hey, I just wanted to say that I wish people would support fundraisers more. There are many fundraisers for the food banks. My family and I are volunteering our little acoustic music group to a fundraiser December 1st in the Grouse Nest Restaurant, and all of the proceeds go directly to the Hocking Hills food pantries. And I'd also like to say, this is a little bit of a positive note, but my son came home from work the other day and somebody had left a full Thanksgiving dinner on his front porch with a note signed anonymous. And I just want to say that people don't realize how much that really helps people.
They're out there, right, Waldina?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thanks for the call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Take care. Matt, you brought up something earlier. I want to get to a few more calls, but you did bring up something earlier. Food banks aren't there for people to show up once a week whenever they, I can go grocery shopping once a week, or I can go grocery shopping three or four times a week, and get the fresh food, and that's a luxury I have. But they're limited, very much limited in most food banks to...
When you come to a pantry, most people can get served by a pantry once or twice a month, depending on the pantry and their resources, and they make their own determination. So what we're really trying to do then, is if you only show up once, you may not have had any produce at that pantry on the given day you showed up, just for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're now trying to look at what other ways can we get fresh produce into people's hands. Real quickly, I would tell people, we get hung up on food deserts. When it comes to fresh food, it isn't about access. It's about cost. They don't take their SNAP card or their dollars and buy fresh produce in a grocery store where it's probably the least expensive place to get it, because they can't afford it. It's too expensive. That's why you buy processed food. So we're trying to get more and more. So we allow people to come back at some of our pantries now every week to see what we have fresh produce-wise. We happen to have some good bread. We may have milk when they come in. Things that all of us would go to the grocery store and replace as we needed them. We're trying to make that more and more available to create the system the same way so we can get this fresh food to people on an as-needed basis and meet their needs individually.
Nathan in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Nathan.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to reiterate the importance of having the fresh food and kind of increasing the availability of that. I work with refugees here in Columbus, and I actually am in charge at our organization of getting making appointments with the food bank and getting them their first meals when they're here in when they arrive in Columbus. And it's one of the things, the issues is you get a lot of the food at the food pantry, and you know it's canned food and processed, you know, sometimes canned food that they've never seen before, and mm-hmm. They don't know how to cook that food, to use that food, and you know it might be unappealing, you know, if they've never seen a loaf of bread before. So it's I think it's definitely something that would be very important and very worthwhile to continue investing in the fresh produce and having that available at food pantries more often.
It's absolutely the future of food banking. It is fresh food. We went up 71% last year in the amount of produce we gave up. We now give up 16 million pounds of produce. So we've got to work it with the agencies in terms of, you know, some can handle that, some can't handle that. We're working on capacity capabilities so that they can have it there more often, or just do more farmers market fresh produce distributions, fresh food distributions in communities on a regular basis. So it can be in addition to or in support of the pantry, not necessarily have to be just at the pantry, because a lot of the pantries can handle fresh food. I mean, they're just small church, you know, little closets kind of thing. So we always are looking for ways to get the fresh food into people's hands. And a lot of the folks that are coming in refugee-wise know what to do with fresh. I mean, they're used to fresh food.
They get that.
Yeah, that's an easy one. You just got to get it to them.
Yeah, exactly. And I would say even though we had a record drought this year, what was produced, it wasn't grade A, so we were able to clear that through our agriculture clearance program. And food banks, the 12 food banks across the state collectively held more than 1,000 direct distributions or farmers markets that Matt talked about, where working with the local agency, flyers were handed out, and folks came in mass. I mean, you know, I was one of these distributions. Over 2,000 people showed up to be able to get produce, and they were so grateful, and they all talked about the same thing. Their limited incomes or what they had available within their food assistance benefits just did not afford them the ability to purchase food.
In other words, if they
stores.
Could just waltz into a grocery store and get what they wanted, they surely wouldn't be waiting in line at a food pantry to
Absolutely.
Do it.
Absolutely.
Correct.
All righty, Nathan, thanks for your call.
Yeah, thank you for taking it.
Take care.
You too.
Yep. Dwight in Greenville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Ms. Fisher, and your guest. I would like to ask that when you're trying to get the food into the pantries quickly, but I have a relative that's in the food business from Florida, and they were trying to tell me at times when all these fruits and vegetables get picked, a lot of them will get picked one day. It may not see your store until the sixth or seventh day, and I'm just worried about with the lack of a lot of FDA searching foods and meats and stuff. We're trying to get them in for seniors in these helpful kitchens. We cannot control the infectious diseases we can put on our fruits from sitting. Plus, the nutrients of the foods are going to go down in quality when they sit that long. So well, where do we go from there? And I appreciate you taking my call this morning.
All right, Dwight. Thanks for
Thank
the
you.
Call.
We bring in produce from all over the country, and as quickly as it's picked, I mean, we're almost doing planned loads now with the California Association of Food Banks, where they'll call us and say, we know we're going to have a bumper crop of this. What would you like? When would you like it? You know, and so we have what we call us a food acquisition cost. It's cost me about 18 cents a pound to get produce from California to here. So that it comes in bins, we can distribute it in big bins, or we can have volunteers box it up, whatever we need to do. This is as fresh as it gets. And so the good news for us is that's out there. And It's a distribution issue. It really isn't. I mean, this is the most food secure nation in the world, and yet now we have over 50 million Americans that are food insecure. We got a connection issue here, and we can do it with good, fresh, healthy food.
Real quick, Nancy in Lisbon, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello, and thanks for taking my call. I've been listening to you, and you know we have a farm, and you know I have raised a family, and we've always had a garden, and we've always had chickens and, you know, eggs, and we grow our own meat. Now, you know, one of the things that, you know, was said earlier about people not wanting to cook or not knowing how to cook and getting people to do that is a very real problem. I know it is where we're at. And there are, I know, numerous people. And over the years, who, you know, whenever you put a garden in, you're always going to have more of what you can and more of what you can consume. And I know that I've offered for people to come at any time to come and pick and take whatever they want. You know, I've offered people eggs. I've offered people meat. And you know that what it really comes down to is people will not come and get it. They want you to bring it to them. And a lot of times people will turn their nose up at fresh food and, you know, wholesome food. And it's very hard to, I think we have a mindset in this country of everything is quick, 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 and it's meals have to be quick, and they don't want to cook, or they're getting out of the habit of coming home and putting that into your schedule of cooking so your families and your, you know, have healthy things to eat. The other thing that you guys had also mentioned about helping the elderly and helping the young families who don't have food, it would be very good if people who have a lot in the communities, if you buddied up and you took on an elderly person or a young family and gave them things. Anyhow, that was my comment, and I appreciate you taking my call, and I've enjoyed listening to you guys.
Thanks, Nancy. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Nancy. I would simply say a lot of that I agree with, but if there's a case where you have excess food and it's not going somewhere, let us know, and we'll get it to families that need it. I will make that happen, because what you talked about are some of the most essential foods, the dairy, the meat, you know, those kind of things, as well as the produce. It all goes together, and we've got to continue, you know, to make sure that people know what to do with the food they get them, because this is the healthiest food we have. And I think when it's grown fresh in Ohio, we want to keep it, you know, for Ohio folks that are hungry.
We only have about a minute left. I wondered, Lisa, if you could read from one of the paper plates.
I appreciate it.
Tell us about
it.
That real quickly. And
we started a paper plate campaign because those who stand in the food lines, they're really the ones who are the voiceless, who suffer day in and day out. And we have collected over 35,000 paper plates that have been sent to our congressional leaders as well as the president. And one just reads from Robin, "I make only $3.50 an hour. With what I make, it's hard to pay bills and provide food for my 18-month-old daughter. The food pantry helps me provide healthy food for my daughter. The state of the economy has made prices go up on all essentials. Thank you."
Well, thank you, Lisa. It's great to have you in the studio again. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Lisa Hamler-Fugit, Executive Director of Ohio Association of Food Banks, and Matt Habash. Matt, thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you.
Matt's the President and CEO of Mid-Ohio Food Bank. Thanks to everybody for listening. Lots of great comments and calls today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.